All right, guys, let's get started. I think I should try to intro everybody because there's going to be... Yeah.
Do it like the Conan announcer.
No. So there are a lot of voices you're going to hear right now. There are a lot of voices you're about to hear, so I'm going to try to give you a name to the voice. Okay, I'm John, obviously. And then, you know, Kayla. Like, you all know Kayla's voice. You know, say something nice.
This is my voice. This is what you hear. This is what you hear when I'm excited.
And, of course, Adonis is here, as always, the fan journalist.
Hello. We are going to have a good time today.
And, yeah, that's how they're going to know your voice, all right. Bridget's on the show this week. Bridget Serdak, everyone.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And then, Woo-hoo! Of course, Maria couldn't make it to the show this week. So, fortunately, her sister is filling in for the first time in a while. Kyle.
Hello.
And that's that. Let's get into it. I thought the first thing, the most important thing that happened this week was that Kayla realized that Kayla had an introduction to the gender politics of mainstream gaming, and to talk all about it, because Kayla, you went to EA.
I did.
You went to EA, Electronic Arts, as they call it, in one of their main offices in Redwood City. Can you just tell us every single detail what happened?
Yes, tell us.
So, all right, let's start from anywhere, the beginning. I was born in Hooper, Ohio, 1993. So I saw on Facebook, well, actually, John pointed out, there is a, like, you could sign up for their game testing.
When she says I saw on Facebook, she means I did everything.
John did everything. He was like, you're going to sign up for this game, and I'm going to lie about most of the games you've played. He's like clicking like, yeah, you've played this. You play this a lot. And I'm like,
yo, they picked you, didn't they?
They did pick me. So I was picked as a backup, which means I go in, and if somebody doesn't show up, then I get to go up and test whatever they have you play. So I arrive like an hour early because I I'm never on time for things, so I have to either be super early or late. So I decided to be super early. So I get in and I check in, even though I'm like, they're like, oh, you're a backup, just sit over there on the couches. And I'm like, oh, cool, fine. Yeah, it's fun. It's a nice little office area, you know. There's the buzz of excitement and games everywhere. They made my favorite game ever, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, for PC. I'm not lying. I'm not lying about that. That is my
favorite. Kayla.
That's
come
the
on.
First game I ever played that wasn't
We all know Chamber of Secrets was better.
Yeah, no, that's better. But, like, it was, like, the very first game that I, like, fell in love with. Okay, anyway, so I'm sitting there, and it's getting closer to time, and not a lot of people are showing up. So I'm like, oh, these are good chances. And then as I'm looking around, I realize I am the only girl in the building, practically. And I'm like, all of these people aren't backups. Like, there is, I think, one other backup there. And I'm like, well, that's stupid, because even if you're a backup, if you show up, you get two free games. So I'm like, either way, even if they just send me home, I'm getting two free games out of this. This is cool. So I'm the only girl, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, they are going to take, there's about 11 of us in the room. I'm like, they're going to take all of these boys back and be like, you stay here, girl. You stay on the couches and make us sandwiches and lemonade for when we get back from playing the game. But they took me back, I think, just because they didn't want to have to do that. They didn't want to have to be like, okay, everyone except the female, come on back. They were just like, okay, everybody, let's go upstairs.
And you weren't just the only girl. You were also the youngest person
also
in the zip code.
Probably the youngest person there. There was another guy that looked around my age, but I think he was a little older than me. And everyone was super quiet. I thought, this is great. We're all going to bond. And, like, we're going to play this game for 4 hours together. No one talked to me. they took us to some lockers, and they were like, if anyone has any bags, and they looked at me and said, or purses, you can put them in this locker. And I was like, I have a satchel that I will put in the locker. So I had to like awkwardly walk up to the front and put my stuff in this locker. It was really weird.
Everybody else was like, okay, I'll put my fanny pack, you know, and my... You know, my weird...
Well, there was one other guy who had like a gym bag. I don't know why he brought that.
It's gonna go swim some laps later.
There was another guy we were waiting on one other person, which was the person that I was the backup for. But I think they were just like, this is awkward. Let's just take her upstairs with everyone else.
And they gave him time too.
They like... did, and he finally showed up, and they still let him come up, and he brought his own keyboard. He brought his own keyboard. It was weird. Yeah. We played a game that I'm not allowed to say what it was for 4 hours. I did not enjoy it at all because I didn't like the type of game we played. But I kept thinking, if this was a game that I liked, this would be the funnest thing ever.
If this was a fun game, I'd be having a fun time.
I think it was fun for what it was, but I just don't like the type of game that they made us play. And now I can say at least they gave that type of game a chance.
What are the two games you got?
I got Mirror's Edge, Catalyst, and yeah, it's super fun. I played it last night for like PS4. Forever. Yeah, PS4 and Dragon Age Inquisition, which I already have.
Give it to me.
PS4. It's upstairs.
That doesn't help me. I have an Xbox One, so.
You should give me Mirror's Edge.
There were Xbox One games.
Yeah, I literally went down the list and I was like, Kayla, you're not going to like any of these games. So I picked a game that she already has and I picked Mirror's Edge.
I was like, I want Dragon Age Inquisition. You were like, we have that for Xbox. And I was like, I want it again.
That didn't happen. I remember picking it without you even looking.
Yeah, I got it.
So that was Kayla's EA experience. It was
weird. And I was like, if they don't let me go upstairs, I am going to sue this whole company.
The best thing.
Gender discrimination.
Honestly, it was way more like, because she's texting me through all of this. I got the live blog on all of it. And it's so much better in real time for Kayla to like tell me this stuff like as it's happening than for just saying it's. Yeah, that was just.
So did you leave your resume there, Kayla, after you left, or?
No. I kept looking, because like, the building we were in, like, we got bathroom privileges, so I was, like, looking around, kind of snooping. No, I didn't go in any of them, but I was, like, looking at all the doors, and I feel like the building we were in, it was just, like, for testing or whatever. Don't know.
All right, so that was Kayla's EA experience. Thanks for sharing, Kayla. I guess now we can get into just a couple of things with movie news, and then later we're going to be reviewing Jason Bourne and Nerve. And Batman the Killing Joke, too. I shouldn't leave that out. But there are a lot of things that happened this week. I mean, there were so many topics. I had a really hard time compressing our list of things to talk about. So the first thing, and this broke right before we started recording, this always seems to happen. Like, every time we're about to record, something pops up. Like last week, it was literally Justice League and Wonder Woman. Like, those trailers came out right before we started recording. Less interesting, I would say, but still important to bring up. Right before we started recording, we found out that Game of Thrones, through HBO. HBO has made an announcement saying that season 8 will be the last season of Game of Thrones. And, you know, we just finished the 6th season. And not long after that season ended, and really actually during the 6th season, we kept hearing there were going to be 2 more, right? So this isn't new. This isn't a huge surprise. They've said for a while now that they want to end it with 2 shortened seasons. So not even like season 7 wouldn't be 10 episodes. It's probably going to be
around... Yeah, it's going to be like, I think they said like 7 or 8.
Yeah. And so they have confirmed this finally. And somebody at HBO has said, quote, this is Casey Bloys, yes, they have a very specific plan about the number of seasons they want to do, end quote. And also he said, believe me, as the new programming executive coming in, if I could get them to do more, I would take 10 more seasons. But we take their lead on what they think they can do, the best version of the show.
Well, all you got to do is lock them in a room until they write more seasons, dude. Like, come on.
Is that how that works?
Well, there are two interesting sides to this, right? So a lot of people, a lot of the reactions to this so far have been good because we want Game of Thrones to end on a high note. And keeping this story going longer than it was intended to go, I think we can all agree would be a bad thing, right?
Mm, yeah.
Most definitely.
So for me, like, I think it's good. I think it's good. I don't know about the shortened season thing. You know, maybe that's good. Maybe I feel like there is already, like, every time we watch a new Game of Thrones season, there's always like one or two episodes you feel like, did we really need that episode? Right. So, and there's another side of this, and that is, what could they do next in the Game of Thrones universe? And I want you guys to chime in, because I'm very interested to hear, like, if you guys are for spinoffs or if you're against it, because Casey Bloys himself was asked if they were interested in that kind of thing. And he said, quote, we've talked about it. It's something I'm not opposed to, but of course it has to make sense creatively. I'm not sure that Benioff and Weiss, those are the makers of Game of Thrones, could really wrap their heads around it when they're just about to start production on season 7. It's pretty intense production, but they're open to it, end quote. So, but he also said there's no concrete plans for it at this point. That is the important. That is the thing I left out. That is actually important. Spinoffs, guys. If you're for it, what would you say needs to happen?
I'd like a spinoff that goes back in time, like really far back into the history of Westeros. I wouldn't necessarily like a spinoff that's set like after the show, because I can't even really think about what that would be about, because we haven't even seen the end of the show, so we don't know what the state of some characters are going to be when the show ends.
A lot of people have said, yeah, let's go back to the stories that have been established in the books that we haven't, that have never been visualized, right? You know, there's all kinds of stuff. The Duncan and Egg stuff, Robert's Rebellion even, you know, would be interesting, a Rhaegar Targaryen thing. There's a lot of stuff to dig into.
Yeah, the story of the three dragon riders, the, what's his face? The guy, Azu.
Azor Ahai?
Azor Ahai, yeah, sounds like an Avatar firebender.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in the history and mythos of Westeros I think would be interesting as like a TV movie or a TV series or something, you know?
Bridget, you're also very well versed on the books. You just went through them. For you, is there anything that's brought up, maybe Blackfyre Rebellion, anything that you would say, I would like to see a spinoff of that?
There's nothing in particular that I want to see a spinoff of, and if they do end up doing a spinoff, I don't want it to be like a whole another 8 seasons, like maybe one or two at most, or like a one shot or a TV movie, nothing big or extravagant.
Why is that?
It's just like too much. At least not anytime soon. If they're going to do it, they shouldn't do it.
Too much Game of Thrones? I don't know.
I don't know how I feel about the spinoffs. It's almost like we don't have any more original ideas left.
That's true. And I think that's going to be the case for a while. But there's another version of this. I'm glad you brought this up, right? Because there is the idea of doing spin-off TV series, but there are also people who are saying, why can't we have a movie trilogy? You know, why can't we have one movie even that could like do something based in the Game of Thrones universe with a totally different cast, different story, something that's conceptualized in this sandbox?
While we're on this path, I think we should make a children's book called I'm a Baby Dragon, Watch Me Hatch or something. And it could be very cute, and the baby dragons hatch, and then you flip through the book, and they grow up, and like they kill people, but in a cute way, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like you pull the little pull strip, and they set fire to the boats. Yeah.
You know, that'd be great. Let's do a series starring Drogon, you know? Let's see what he was doing when he ran away, you know? Just a whole children's series on, like,
all the bloody murder.
Is that like a kid's book for adults, like All My Friends Are Dead?
Is that a real book?
That's great. That's an idea.
Yeah, because like you have like the pull thing, and it's like the fire like goes over the person, and then when you let go, their bodies become ash in the picture.
Oh, God.
But yeah, I really like the idea of doing a spinoff movie or movie trilogy, because I'm someone who hasn't gotten into the TV show. I sort of wasn't really around friends who were that into it until they were like four seasons deep, and I was like, this is a lot to catch up on. So I think that would be a good way to intro a new audience of people who haven't watched all the shows or aren't caught up, gave up because it's too much to catch up on.
And the nice thing about it is you don't have to know anything about Game of Thrones to watch the movie. It can be accessible simply as a high fantasy film. Based in a universe, it would sort of be like if The Hobbit, you know, that kind of thing. You don't have to watch Lord of the Rings to know what's going on in The Hobbit, because by definition, The Hobbit happened before. It's interesting you bring up, by the way, Kyle, that you haven't watched. Reed Jones, who's been on the podcast, he recently
binged the hell out of the show.
He binged the entire series in 1 month. And he adored it. You know, he wouldn't say anything about it, I remember, because when he first said that he was going to watch it, and then he didn't say anything about the show until he finished it and was like, I'm so glad. I don't want to like take his words, or I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically was like, I'm really glad I watched it. Is that just. But okay, so that's Game of Thrones. Just confirmed. We pretty much saw this coming. We'll probably learn more information as that comes along. But let's move on. There are a lot of trailers that came out this week, guys. So many that it was really difficult to figure out like which ones to talk about. There's a new one with the war movie with Andrew Garfield, for example. And there was the Magnificent Seven one that we missed from last week, and a couple more. But the one that I wanted to bring up for conversation, because I think this could use some conspiring, is the new movie from M. Night Shyamalan. Now remember, okay, M. Night Shyamalan, love him or hate him, he sort of defied expectations last year with his horror movie The Visit. And we just got a new trailer for his next movie, Split, starring James McAvoy. And I don't know, guys. I hate this. I honestly was watching this trailer waiting for it to make me cringe. And it did, but in the way that I wanted it to, if that makes any sense. So I'm just saying, you know, so here's one thing the movie has going for it. And if you haven't seen the trailer, basically James McAvoy, he plays a serial killer with a split personality.
He's Norman Bates.
Yeah, the movie basically follows him after he abducts three young girls, and they have to basically manipulate his split personalities to try to escape. And while this is happening, I mean, it wouldn't be an M. Night Shyamalan movie if something weird and paranormal wasn't also happening. They're also trying to avoid some sort of quote-unquote beast that is going to show up and do God knows what to them. So it's a suspense thriller. It's the second time that Shyamalan is going to be collaborating with Jason Blum, which is great because I think he and Blum did a great job with The Visit. We don't know if that was a one-off, but what do you guys think so far of this project? Are you sort of interested, or do you think it kind of looks weird? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. We talked about this a little before we started recording. Whenever I hear M. Night Shyamalan, I always, like, I don't know. With The Visit really defied my expectations. I really liked it, but he's still on the hot seat for me because I'm really hoping that he's found a groove. And when I saw the trailer for Split, I like you, I was really interested in the movie, and I think it looks pretty good. And I like, you know, James McAvoy's whole split personality thing. I think there was some great acting in the trailer, and it does look suspenseful. And I'm hoping it's as good as The Visit, if not better, because then that means that he's finally getting back into the groove he had when he made movies like Sixth Sense or Signs. And I'm hoping it's good, and I'm hoping it's not. I'm hoping we're getting that M. Night Shyamalan and not the M. Night Shyamalan of like The Happening. You know, have you guys heard about these bees and stuff?
You sound cautiously optimistic, if I may say.
Yeah, because I'm going to go in seeing this movie hoping for the best, but I'm still, I don't want to say because M. Night Shyamalan is directing it that I'm expecting the worst, because that's not true, but I'm not expecting the worst. Like, it's just, basically, I've been hurt before by Shyamalan, and
I want to give him a chance. One decent movie, more than decent. I mean, it was a good film. One good film doesn't earn back our trust that quickly, because you're right, we've all been hurt by Shyamalan.
Right.
It sounds weird to say, but I'm sure he would like us phrasing it that way, knowing his personality.
Yeah, we're not expecting the worst. We're just prepared for it.
Right. It's like he shows up at your door and he's like, "I've changed, babe. I've changed." Like, all right, we'll give this another shot, but I don't know.
Kyle, you know, as a Puerto Rican who grew up loving the Shyamalan movies. Yeah. Actually, I don't know. Have you liked the Shyamalan movies at all?
That's a complicated question. In Puerto Rico, the internet is really slow. I don't know if Maria's experienced this. So I don't know how that matters to anything. But I've liked some of the older Shyamalan movies. Didn't see his most recent, like, few. But I think I'm also cautiously optimistic about this. I don't love horror movies.
It's a suspense thriller,
which is why I'm more optimistic about this one. But for me, I'm a scaredy cat, so it is kind of a horror movie. But I think it's really interesting. I think there's a lot of play happening in the movie, or in the trailer at least, that I watched 3 minutes ago. So I'm excited for it. I think it'll be good.
The thing I'm not excited about is that it's opening in January. That's kind of a red flag, isn't it?
Well, I'm pretty excited because it's either going to make me laugh or I'm going to be like how I was with The Visit, scared but also like, whoa, how cool. I'm glad you did something cool and good. So yeah, either way, it's a win, really.
Honestly, yeah. I liked The Visit more. I gave that film a lot of slack simply because it did such a good job at making me laugh. And yet, being scary at the exact same time. And that was really, really good.
I hope this one does that, too. With its, I like it when suspenseful movies have a bit of humor.
I think we'll get some humor in James McAvoy's performance.
Well, we'll see. And, yeah, once again, that movie is coming out sometime in January. But let's move on.
Can I just say real quick, I'm so mad that my birth month is associated with, like, terrible movies. I want to know who decided that.
Like, yeah, you kind of got thrown the I was born in October, so
lucky.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting just about everything, which I wasn't gonna bring this up, but I think this is interesting. We've talked at length about how summer 2016 has been a very disappointing affair, with very few exceptions, and it's funny to me how everything I'm excited about is coming out after the summer, and I mean I don't want to speak too soon, but I feel like. With Sully and Edward Snowden, the new Star Wars movie, and Moana. It just seems like there are so many fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them movies. Sorry, I couldn't resist that pun. It was just like, you got to say it. All of these films are coming out in the fall. And I'm wondering if we're going to have a 2014 situation, because in 2014, it was kind of the same thing. The summer was okay. You know, it like I remember the best movie that came out in that summer was Guardians of the Galaxy, and it wasn't until the very end of the summer.
Oh, yeah, it was August, huh?
Yeah. Everything that was really good in 2014, you know, besides the Oscar bait, was basically in October, November, and December. So,
yeah, I mean, we've got a great fall lineup this year, and I think we've got a pretty good one next year, too, right?
So far, so good on that front, yeah. I mean, all of getting capped off by yet another Star Wars movie. I mean, it depends on how Rogue One goes, but gosh, it's like every year we have Star Wars. That's just weird to me. I can't, I'm still not able to process that.
So excited. I'm so excited. It's what a great time to be alive. Star Wars every year.
Can you say that in Spanish?
No.
He refuses. Okay, so this wouldn't be now conspiring unless every once in a while we conspired. And sometimes when you conspire a little, maybe you conspire a little too much. Right? What started out as an innocent fan theory, Jason Todd being the Joker in Suicide Squad, for example. The Squirtle Squad. I remember when this theory came out, right? And at first, I thought it was a very, very imaginative observation, more than anything else. You know, very interesting clues were brought up that made it seem like, hey, this does seem like the kind of thing DC would pull. I mean, I know people look at this theory, and the idea is basically Jason Todd is a Robin in the DC universe, and based on the fact that you see his suit in Batman versus Superman, you see sort of this tattoo that is very similar to the one that the Joker gives Jason Todd, and a couple of other things, people have said maybe because part of that story is that Jason Todd becomes basically a Joker character. This was most recently in the Batman Arkham games. He plays a villain. People are saying that would be an interesting twist that they could add to these movies, have the Joker be Jason Todd. Which I hear that and I think, oh, that's interesting. I don't think that's where they're going to go with it, but I could totally see Warner Brothers thinking that that's a really good twist, even though a lot of people would see it coming if they evidenced it enough. But inevitably, this theory was met with so much outrage. Adonis, you are the king of outrage on the internet.
Can I?
You inspire a lot of it.
Good.
No, but I know, Adonis, I know you have a very specific opinion on this. What was your take? And I promise this is getting into some movie news, like something actually happened concerning the story. Before we get into that, Adonis, can you just give me a basic, what's your opinion on how all this stuff went down?
My opinion on the whole Jason Todd Joker thing?
Yes.
I think people need to, and I know we talked about this a long time ago when we were talking about fan theories. I think people need to chill out just a little bit because fan theories don't really destroy film discussion or discourse, as people always say they do. They just give fans a chance to talk about their favorite movies and bring a little bit of their personal opinion into it. I do think that people who come up with theories and treat them as 100% fact need to chill out a bit too, because you need to understand that they're just theories. But I think the whole Jason Todd Joker thing is just a harmless theory, got blown way out of proportion because, not because it was a really convincing theory, but because people were just so outraged by the fact that someone would think that DC would do that, that they just had to share it all over Facebook and be like, no, this is not right, you can't do this, they would never do that. But like you said, I can totally see Warner Brothers doing something like that, because they've done something like that many times before. And
just look at Marvel's done that, you know, with the Mandarin, you know.
Right. So it's not a very convincing theory, but it's not an impossible or implausible theory. So yeah, my take on it is just people need to understand that theories are just theories and opinion is opinion, and people just want to talk about their favorite films and bring a little bit of their personal thought into it.
Yeah, I think what goes into this too is that there's harm done on both sides in a way. The idea that this theory was written by somebody who thought it was an interesting observation more than anything else, and then it became clickbait. Right. It became I saw headlines that were like, you're never going to believe who the Joker really is. And it was framing it in a way like this was some sort of like gotcha journalism thing. Like somebody was trying to like force this theory onto other people, which was not the original author's intent. I don't know the original author. I know that he was. So I think it was somebody on Reddit or something like that. And actually, it was weird because Movie Pilot got the brunt of the blame for this, because people were rewriting this theory and forming opinions on it on that site. And like it became like a catching joke that everyone on Movie Pilot thinks that this rumor is true or something like that. It was a very odd time like when this was happening. Right. I remember. And so I bring all this up because recently the director of Suicide Squad, David Ayer, was asked, hey, what do you think is the most ridiculous rumor you've heard about the theory, and like the most ridiculous rumor you've heard about the film? And he said that the Joker is Jason Todd. It ain't the case. He's not. Quote, the tattoos.
It ain't the case, see?
Yeah, I know. He was like he was trying to like get into the Gotham rhythm or something. He said the tattoos tell a very specific story, because he was also asked about the tattoos, right? Because that's probably the biggest like tell. And he said, the tattoos tell a very specific story, and eventually people will decipher them and understand what's going on. But obviously they're contentious. Anytime you do something new, it's contentious. There's a very specific story and Easter egg in those tattoos, and even his teeth. There's an entire story behind that, which is absolutely canon. I think the theory is that, like, because his teeth are fake, it goes to, like, how Jason Todd was beaten and his teeth were knocked out. It's putting his history on his body. The Joker is a little more working class, who I believe could live in our world. Which was a really weird way to end that quote. Like, it's sort of like ending it with like, you know, if somebody asks you about like your movie and then you reference like, oh, and by the way, I really think that, you know, corn tastes best off the cob. You know, it's just like, well, what are you talking about, man? Now, Bridget.
What? Now, John.
You've definitely been a writer on the old Pilot for a while now. What's your take on this? Do you think David Ayer is where are you at?
I think it was right of him to finally put this rumor to bed, but he definitely should have done it sooner, because it's been going on for so long, and Movie Pilot was getting the brunt of it. And it, especially with the theory that came out not too long after that about Batman himself. It was just...
Which one?
Just
the Deathstroke thing,
Deathstroke,
right?
Is Batman. Yeah.
That one was terrible, though.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
but
that was A for effort. But, like, that was the biggest slog. I'm being mean. I just did not like that, care for that at all.
No, but because both of them were so strongly associated with Movie Pilot, like, we just kept getting slammed. And it's about time that he said something, but he definitely should have said it sooner.
Yeah. I mean, I understand. Like, obviously, it gets into PR. It gets into, like, what's going to make headlines. And saying, like, bringing this stuff up right before the movie comes out, it's not a coincidence. You know, it's not... It was probably more planned than anything else. Like, hey, find a way to work in this thing so that you can get people talking about it. Because look what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, Suicide Squad is coming out next week, and we just happen to be referencing this old fan theory. You know, so let's bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, time to move on to a couple of things that we've been up to. I know we already talked about the EA thing. But we also wanted to bring up that we've been watching the new Netflix show, Stranger Things. Now, if you guys haven't heard Stranger Things, that is that. If I was going to do a Netflix recommendation officially, I mean, I honestly would encourage all of you guys to go check it out. Kale and I, we're about, what, 4 or 5 episodes in, probably 5. So about halfway through. This show is basically, if you took Steven Spielberg and Stephen King and you put it in a blender and you just sort of like shaved your head and then just drank this blender, you would be able to write the script of Stranger Things.
Why would you need to shave your head? What was it?
Because of the character.
Obviously, Adonis.
Come on, man.
Oh, yeah. You know.
I believe, Bridget, you've seen a couple of episodes.
Correct.
What do you think about Stranger Things? Is this something that you recommend so far?
After only the first episode, I was recommending it to people. I didn't know how to explain it to them, though, because I didn't really understand what was going on.
Like, look at what happened with me trying to explain it. Like,
that's
normal.
Like, I don't... It's a very good show, and I think the best part about it are the kids.
Yes, the kids are great.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Yeah, the kids are definitely the best part of the entire show. I wasn't expecting that because they were all so young. Well, for the main 5, I think. But they were all fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even some of the teenagers are done pretty well. Like, none of the teenagers to me, you know, because that is a subplot, and you're going to see more of them later on. They just sort of feel like teenagers to me. Like, it's not like, wow, it's like I'm out of high school right now or anything like that. But it's very competently done.
I don't think I've ever heard a teenager say that.
Yeah. Kayla,
I'm out of high school right now.
Kayla, you've been watching, you've been watching the show too. What, it 5 episodes in, are you liking the show?
I love this show. I like it because there is a detective character, but I am also the detective character. I am putting the pieces together and figuring it out, and I have so many just questions that need answering, which is why I need to watch the show all the time.
Right, like every time we watch an episode, Kayla's like, let's watch another one. And like it is a very binge-worthy show. It's hard to stop watching.
Because they leave you with cliffhangers, and so I'm like, well, we have to watch the next one, and you're like, but I'm tired, I want to go home.
the best cliffhangers are the ones that they're not cliffhangers that, like, let's say somebody opens the door, you don't see what's on the other side and it ends. That's a terrible cliffhanger. This has cliffhangers that are great. It's the cliffhanger where you open the door, see someone unexpected, and that's how it ends. You already know what is about to happen. You know that the person's going to fall off the cliff. That's it, right? And this show does that very well, very competently. And I also love the show. I think it's really good, really well done. It kind of reminds me of how Lost kind of hooks you with questions and, you know, more questions and answers to things. But I think it gives you a little bit more credit. Like, I think Lost sort of loses its way with that, no pun intended. Where it honestly, like, yeah, it gives you way more questions than answers. This show does a decent job of giving you answers at a good pace. And also, I mean, the aesthetic is great. It takes place in the 80s. It has a lot of, like, honestly, it really is, like, if you took Stand By Me and E.T. and a little bit of, like, I don't know, maybe Super 8, actually, and put those things together. There is a lot of J.J. Abrams influence in this as well. You're gonna see that it's well worth your time. Well worth your time. My favorite character is the sheriff, personally. He basically says everything that I'm thinking, and it's great. Every character I'm a big fan of. I think the mom is a little weird, played by Winona Ryder. She kind of gets on my nerves a little bit.
She's nuts.
Moms do.
Right. I don't like it when moms tell me what to do. So they don't even know if I like Cinnamon Toast Crunch. So really good show. You guys can check it out all on Netflix. And it's been generating so much attention from people so quickly that it looks like Netflix is definitely going to give it more seasons. So it only has 8 episodes, right? And I haven't finished it, but what I've been told is that the series, it leaves a lot of stuff open. It doesn't wrap everything up super nicely. Netflix hasn't officially announced that they're doing more seasons, but it looks like they probably will. The show was created by the Duffer Brothers, and they had this quote when they were asked whether or not there's going to be more for the show coming out. And they said, the answer is yes. We definitely are hopeful to go several more seasons, and the plan is to continue with this set of characters while introducing a few critical key new ones next season. So I'll just say that a lot of the big mysteries get answered at the end of season one, but we are very much kind of unearthing new problems and questions that merit future stories and future investigations in the most enjoyable way. I'm really glad that they are saying this, because I really want to see more, and I haven't even finished the first season.
I definitely have to check the show out already.
Yeah, man. Yes, what are you waiting for? You've been at Comic-Con, I guess.
I don't know. People are always like, check it out. And for some reason with me, I always put things off. Like, I didn't watch Breaking Bad until all the seasons were on Netflix, and I binged that so fast. So I definitely need to check this out, especially since I love the mystery show. Like, I've been watching a lot of Twin Peaks recently.
Yeah, yeah. I'm more of a Wayward Pines kind of guy.
Oh, Wayward Pines is so good.
Now, Adonis. This is actually a good pivot, because one of the reasons you haven't really had time to watch this new show, which just came out, is because you were at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes.
So we're going to give you a little bit of time here. You were able to go, you were on a panel. You were able to talk about, I think, diversity in comics, and you were at the event and you got to do a lot of fun stuff. Give us a rundown, man. What happened?
All right. It was really cool. First of all, I thought I told you guys this already. The panel did not happen, sadly.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, got waitlisted. I don't know why, but San Diego Comic-Con took way too long to tell any of us, so it did not happen. But I still went to Comic-Con, had a really great time. A lot more sweaty nerds than I thought, honestly. The internet does not prepare you for that. There were literally thousands of people just walking everywhere. You couldn't get... It took me like an hour to get from point A to point B at the convention center. But other than that, and the lines, it was really fun. I got to see a bunch of cool panels. I met Seth Rogen and the cast of Preacher, which was really cool. I attended the whole DC Legends of Tomorrow panel. And there were, oh God, the lines were just, there were people, for Hall H, I tried so hard to get into Hall H, but there were people there in line since Thursday night trying to get in on Saturday. And
yeah,
so
I heard,
like,
that people went to... People, okay, so I heard this. Somebody was in the line Friday morning at like 7 a.m., and there were already 5,000 people in front of him.
Yeah, people went there. So technically, the Hall H line opens as soon as Comic-Con starts, and Comic-Con starts on Wednesday. So people got there on Wednesday, sat down, and did not move for 3 straight days.
Which, okay, if you're going to do that, though, all you need is a couple of people who do shifts. Like, you can do that, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. You can, if you go as a group, you can leave and come back to your group. So I'm sure a lot of them did that. But still, that's just so insane to me. Like, I don't know. Power to the super nerds, because I don't know if I could ever do that. I didn't get into Hall H. I did check out all the cool Hall H news, because a friend of mine did get into Hall H. Basically, was like feeding me information via phone.
You also you met Jeremy Johns, right?
I did meet Jeremy Johns. He's exactly like you think he would be. He's like, you see him on YouTube and you're like, no, that's just a character. No, I go up to him and like, hey, you're Jeremy Johns, right? He's like, yeah, I am. And I'm like, can I get a picture? He's like, yeah, sure, here you go. And then, like, he gives my phone to the other guy because he's with some guy and like says, here, take a picture of us. And he just puts his sunglasses on and like gets into a pose and does like the thumbs up. And like, oh my God, this is amazing. I love this. Like he had drank like 50 energy drinks that morning. You could tell.
I forget, by the way, who here is a fan of Jeremy Johns and who is not? Raise your hand.
I like his videos. I think they're entertaining. I don't necessarily always agree with the way he reviews things and grades them. But as a YouTuber, I think he's pretty fun to watch. But I'd much rather get my reviews from like Stuckman or Nostalgia Critic. But yeah, so he was cool to meet. I met Black Nerd too, but I didn't get a picture because I'm stupid.
Oh man, that would have been a great. I've been watching Black Nerd since like 2008, when he was on Movie Mob.
Oh yeah, Movie Bomb. I forgot he was on that. That's now he's with Screw Attack, I think. But yeah, that was really cool. But the line system is a little weird at Comic-Con because I remember. So I went with a couple of friends of mine, and one of them was disabled, right? And there was this masquerade party going on. I think it was like Sunday night, and he wanted to get into the masquerade party, and so his girlfriend got them tickets. And when you're disabled at Comic-Con, they give you, like, a little sticker, right? So people know you're disabled, so you can get into the disabled line. So he goes to the disabled line to get into the masquerade ball. And the guy working there is like, hey, you can't get in here. You need another sticker on top of your disabled sticker that shows that you can get into the masquerade ball or something. And he was like, okay, where do I get this coveted level 2 disabled sticker? And he's like, oh, the office is closed. And it's like, okay, can I still get in? He's like, no, you have to have a sticker, like this guy. And so the guy goes into the line and points to the badge of another disabled guy. He doesn't have the sticker. And he's like, I mean like this guy. And he goes to like 5 different guys, and none of them have that special sticker. And he's like, okay, so they can't get in either, right? He's like, no, they're already in the line, so I'll just let them go. And I'm just like,
what?
Yeah, it was very weird. There's so many people working at Comic-Con that are volunteers, or like this is their first time. And so... And they don't talk to each other because they're on different parts of the convention. So the staff there was not very great. In some parts, the staff was great. In some other parts of the convention, it was not. But yeah, that was one of the weird things that happened. Another weird thing that happened was the Killing Joke panel, which was an absolute mess. Like, I went to a lot of panels, and some of them were just really... annoying. Like they always have Q&As, and there's those people asking the most generic of questions, like, hey, who's your favorite superhero, what's your favorite color, like someone asked Neil deGrasse Tyson that, and it was terrible. But
what in the world? Hey, expert on the universe, what is what's your favorite song?
Yeah, I have a feeling it's Mariah Carey, but I just wanted to confirm. Oh God!
Yeah. Checks out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there was a lot of really dumb Q&As, and then there was the Killing Joke Q&A. So they showed Killing Joke at Comic-Con, and it was, I mean, it wasn't a bad movie. It's not a great movie. The first 30 minutes are just like kind of, they go on for too long. They give a whole story to Batgirl that is just absolutely controversial and really not needed. And it's kind of stupid and pointless. And at the end of the movie, they had a Q&A with the people there. I can't remember. I think Kevin Conroy was there. I can't remember if he was. Mark Hamill was not. He called in from his phone. But someone asked the director, how do you say his name? David Azzarello or something. They asked him basically why he felt the need to... No, okay. So someone asked him why he felt the need... to make Batgirl such, like, why he felt the need to make Batgirl such a controversial and stereotypical female character. And before he could answer, someone in the crowd, I think it was a journalist, yelled out, basically yelled out the same thing, but in, I guess, a much ruder way. I can't remember exactly what he said. He's like, why did you ruin Batgirl? And so Azzarello, I think I'm saying his name right.
His name is Brian Azzarello.
Brian Azzarello, thank you. He said, basically, and I don't know if I should say it because it's kind of vulgar, but do you want me to say it?
Yes.
So he has to say it.
Say it.
You can say it.
All right. This is a family podcast, but I guess cover your ears, children. He basically yells to the reporter who yelled out, why did you ruin Batgirl? He basically said, what did you say?
So yeah, he basically insulted the reporter in front of everybody. It was a very awkward situation for everyone, and it just made the whole experience worse. Like,
we need to censor that, because I have to put a beep over that. So say it in the now conspiring, family friendly way.
All right. He basically said to the reporter who asked, why would you ruin Batgirl? He basically said, hey, what did you say to me? You flipping pussycat?
There it is. Got it.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be all over the internet.
It's giving him a lot of credit for saying he ruined Batgirl forever.
I mean, yeah.
People are oversensitive. Like, we know this didn't ruin Batgirl. Come on. Stephanie Brown did that already.
Wow. I guess we know who your least favorite Batgirl is.
I'm just joking around. Yeah, okay. So I guess we can just get into it then. Obviously, Killing Joke has caused a lot of controversy. So let's talk about the actual movie. Adonis, you saw it, of course. What did you think about it overall?
Okay. I thought some things about it were all right. Like, Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill, they're the Joker and the Batman, or other way around. And they really were at the top of their game for this movie, as they usually are. So I thought that was pretty cool. It was nice hearing their voices again. It was a little flashback to the animated series and just everything they've done over
Bruce
their career.
Yeah, it's Bruce Timm, you know, who helped do this, right? So, and he, of course, did the animated series.
Right, and you could definitely see his influence in this. But at the same time, it's just so... I don't know what it is about. It's very weird. Like, I had the same thing with Justice League Gods and Monsters, which Bruce Timm also did, which was a more mature rated version of his Batman style.
I don't think I saw
that one. I like it's pretty good. I think they're just like shorts online. That's how I saw them. And that whole series was pretty good. But the way Bruce Timm handles like mature. I would much rather have him do like PG-13 level stuff like he did with the animated series, especially in this case, because I feel like everyone producing this took it just a little bit too far with the whole R-rated thing. And it's not even that. It's just there's so many things wrong with it. I don't like the first 45 minutes being dedicated to Batgirl and Batman's relationship and then sort of segueing into the Killing Joke.
Not even segueing, too.
It's barely segueing. Just,
it's honestly, the Killing Joke interrupts this totally different Batman-Batgirl story.
Right, that, it's basically...
The weirdest thing about it is the Killing Joke is an iconic comic story, right, from 1988. Mm-hmm. You know, it's among, like, people's... When you ask people what their favorite Batman story is, Killing Joke is always in, like, the top five. So right. To take something so iconic and then to introduce... this Batman-Batgirl romance thing that, I'm not spoiling it, it's a very, like, prevalent thing. Like, they really hit you over the head with this sort of romance in, like, the first few scenes.
Right.
To introduce that, which I know is something that Bruce Timm has always been fascinated by, the relationship between Batman and Batgirl. If you watch the animated series and you watch Batman Beyond, it's strongly implied in Batman Beyond. The comics directly do a story about the two of them being in a relationship. And it just feels like Bruce Timm is adding this sort of like, not, I don't want to be mean and say it's his fan fiction or anything, but it is sort of like this completely unrelated thing that he's adding to Killing Joke. And I think that's a big reason why a lot of people are getting so upset. They're saying things like, you ruined Batgirl, because they don't like it that Bruce Timm is inserting this very specific and jarring vision of these two characters into something that's supposed to be about the Joker. Like, if you had just done one movie that maybe explored Batgirl and Batman, and honestly, they don't do a good job of it in this first 30 minutes. No, it's very, very awkward, very poorly done. But if they had done a whole movie on it and done it well, I think there's room for that. But yeah, in this case, not a fan of what they tried to do.
Yeah, and then there's the whole thing, like, okay, so in Batman Beyond, it was a little better when Batgirl and Batman's relationship was hinted at, because it was years after, and it wasn't just like a little one-time awkward fling between them like it sort of is in here. And also, I don't know if they ever specifically, I mean, she's obviously over she's not underage in the movie, but in the comics, I'm fairly certain she is. And at this point in their career, Batman's like a father figure to her. And I think a lot of people are complaining about that too, because it's just very oddly incestual in a way.
Yeah, the Killing Joke, this is a part, this, in this sort of corner, Gordon is his best friend.
Right.
In this like setting. And this is his best friend's daughter. And she is of age in Killing Joke. I'm quite certain she's in college. So it's not illegal. And clearly, you know, she's a college student in this one. And yeah, it does sort of have that weird – I think what ruins it in Killing Joke is that it's all about the power dynamics between them. And it's all about the red flags of this clearly abusive relationship that she's in, and then the way that it just, like, basically they did it to end her career as Batgirl beyond just shooting her. And it's very odd, and it's a very weird way to do it. And so I don't like that they needed that to set her up as Batgirl. You don't need to, right?
Yeah, that's another thing too, like Killing Joke in the comic books, Batgirl's been Batgirl for a while at this point, so there's more of an emotional, you know, feeling when she gets paralyzed. And I'm sorry if I'm spoiling Killing Joke, the comic, for some people, but it's been around since the 90s.
Late 80s.
Late. Oh, seriously? It's that old?
1988.
Oh, wow. Whew. I did not know it was that old. But yeah, so when she gets paralyzed, it's much more emotional because she's been Batgirl for a while. This movie, she's been Batgirl for like 35 minutes. And not even the best Batgirl. She's just been a romantic interest for Batman.
Yeah, it's been more of like she's a teenage drama queen,
right?
Rather than she's Batgirl and she's trying to assert her independence. I mean, I think what makes it weird is that she's the one like pining for him in this movie, and then it's like she's telling people like she's dating him, and it's like, what?
Yeah, that was so weird. Like, she was like, oh yeah, you heard about my boyfriend Batman. Yeah, it's no big deal, you know.
Yeah, I honestly don't get why this was R-rated as well. And like, we can transition into like, because like I said before, it's interrupted by Killing Joke. The whole Batgirl thing happens, and then we're done with that. And then it moves right. It's like two episodes of Batman, the animated series, back to back. Right. And then it transitions into Killing Joke in a very weird way. Joker's never mentioned before. And like, all of a sudden just Batman shows up, and it's like, what? It's not cohesive. It doesn't connect these two parts of the story. It feels completely unnecessary. And it's not the Batgirl thing. There's nothing about it that directly relates with the relationship between Batman and Joker. It'd be one thing if there was some sort of like compelling narrative to be like, you know, start off with Batman and Batgirl having this interesting power dynamic and then replicating that with his relationship with the Joker. But you obviously can't do that because you introduced a romantic subplot. So it's very odd. And then, of course, I mean, you'll like the Killing Joke stuff in this. I mean, they directly adapt panels from the comic, and the best ones at that. And they do a great job of realizing it. The one thing I don't like, though, and, you know, I like Alan Moore's Killing Joke. I like what he did with it. I think it deserves to be a favorite among people. I think it's a bit of a sacred cow. People like to hold it up as something that's a little bit better than it is. I think that it's kind of a one-off, you know, thing. But that said, you know, if they're going to do a movie on it, right, they need to evolve it beyond just adding a random Batgirl story at the very beginning. That's the only thing they really add. Everything else that you see, I mean, it's really just the comic. I mean, they add like a little bit of dialogue here and there, but there's really nothing else. It's just the straight story, which in a way is cool if that's what you wanted. You wanted to just see Killing Joke animated, but the animation's not really that impressive, and, you know, it's nothing to write home about. It's not like it's not reimagining Killing Joke in any way that sort of like gets you excited, like, oh, this is even better, or this is like a different type of way to tell it, and it just doesn't add anything to Killing Joke. So it feels like a bit of a waste of time.
Right. And, you know, like what you were saying about it needing a cohesive narrative and basically just tacking on a Batgirl story right at the beginning and then getting into Killing Joke. I mean, we don't need like three movies before this, like showing Batman and Batgirl's relationship and her relationship with the Joker in order for this to have worked. I think like they could have done something like one of my favorite animated movies, DC animated movies, is Under the Red Hood. And that movie didn't have like a bunch of predecessors like before it, and it still managed to show you the whole story and relationship between Batman, the Joker, and Jason Todd. And it got straight to the point with Jason Todd's death in like the first 20 minutes. And it still, it wasn't weak or anything because it had a cohesive narrative. It showed you everything about, it showed you everything about these
mattered
characters. Yeah. Everything happening. That mattered. Yeah.
And their way to justify the Batgirl thing, and I guess I won't spoil it, but they do like one quick thing at the end to sort of wrap it up, but it really just doesn't feel like earned or relevant. So it's sort of just, yeah.
It feels like they knew they were getting a sequel, but I don't know.
Apparently not. I think we were talking about this earlier, Kayla, but I mean, in my opinion, the previous Batman films that they've been doing, like Son of Batman and the Blood, what was it called? Bad Blood or whatever it is. Yeah. The ones that they've been doing with like Damian Wayne have been much stronger films. I mean, they're not perfect or anything, but this just feels a huge step back for the DC animated movies.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, not only are they stronger, but they look a lot better too.
Yeah, they're animated better. The designs feel just more evolved.
It's just so much more professional. It makes this look like somebody like cut together a bunch of Batman episodes and made like a fan thing. I don't know. I know the Killing Joke is real, but like somebody was like, oh, I want to make the Killing Joke into a movie. So they took a bunch of episodes and cut it together.
I don't know. I wouldn't go that far. I kind of disagree with that. I think that the animation is not that good, but it is still like it's professional quality. It's just not as good as what we have been getting. So that's kind of noticeable. Plus, I think Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill reprising the role add a lot. But I just wish they were in something better. You know, that's all.
Yeah. And the animation style being this, I mean, not bad, but being this not as great as like Son of Batman is really weird because this was made for theaters, right? Like they made the decision to put it on demand and DVD way after they announced it. Like they announced it, like we're going to have the first R-rated Batman animated movie in theaters. And it's weird that this is a theater level production and yet something like Son of Batman, which went straight to DVD, looks so much better and so much professionally done, you know?
I think it's just because they knew the demand for a Killing Joke movie was going to be incredible. And this movie kind of fell from people's graces really quick. I mean, once those early reviews started coming out and the controversy stuff started popping up, I mean, opinion over this movie soured like over the course of a day. And unfortunately, I'm part of that crowd that just was not impressed. And it sounds like you guys weren't very impressed either. Personally, I think that if you really, really love the comic, it's worth your time. Especially if you like the animated series, if you like Bruce Timm's like handling of these characters, and you want to hear those voice performances, the iconic Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill performances again, this isn't a huge waste of time. I don't know if I can understand justifying like $20, you know, dropping that for this. I mean, it's a little much. So,
yeah, wait for Netflix or Hulu; it'll get there.
Right. I think that's the better option. Or even like Redbox or something like that. Definitely not a theater, not worthy of your theater money. So,
right.
Quickly, let's get into a review of Nerve. That's a movie that you, Adonis, also watched. It stars Emma Roberts and Dave Franco. And walk us through what this movie is. This is the movie that came out that was not called Jason Bourne. It didn't get nearly as much attention for it coming out at the same time. It's kind of understandable, even though it's a July movie. And one thing I'll add is, one of the reviews I read was kind of saying that this is like the movie for like, this is like the perfect movie for the Pokemon Go generation based on its premise. And just based on the idea that it's about teenagers doing dangerous and stupid stuff with their phones out in the real world. So Adonis, what is Nerve about and what did you think about it?
So Nerve is a PG-13 techno thriller movie. I looked up the actual description of what it's called because I didn't know how to describe it. It's like a techno thriller action type of movie. And it stars Dave Franco and Emma Roberts, like you said. And basically it's just a bunch of teenagers who basically play truth or dare on their phone, but there's no truth. It's just dare. And you've got like the watchers who are the people, you know, sitting at home, you know, watching their Twitch stream accounts, watching the players who do dangerous and reckless things for money. Like, you know, rob a store and you get $100, hang from a building and you get $50.
Robbing a store is its own reward and you don't have to get caught.
Yeah. But you also get money. So there you go. If you ever wanted to rob a store, there's your incentive.
Is it like shoplifting? You know, like, oh, take that piece of gum or something like that.
Well, I don't want to spoil it because there is a specific scene in the movie where they do something like this.
Okay.
But it's not like take a piece of gum. I think you're putting way too much credit in the. You're giving the internet way too much credit if that's what you think they'll come up with.
Yeah, for $100.
When they're talking about shoplifting a store.
For $50, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I kind of agree and disagree. It is very. It is the movie for the Pokemon Go generation. This day, I think it's much more extreme though. Like there are people in real life doing really stupid stuff with Pokemon Go, but that's not everybody. In this movie, it's everybody. Like
the point is for us to get high off of other people's daredevil antics.
Right. Like everyone is playing this game and doing dangerous stuff. And to me, it's kind of like the Purge, how there's this thing taking over society that you wouldn't really expect. But then you think about it, and it's like, wow, this is really insane. This is happening. With the Purge, it was the whole, you know, crime is legal for one day thing. With this one, it's totally cool to dangle from a, what are those called?
A raptor?
Crane. No, not a raptor. Dangle from a crane in New York City just to get some money. But it doesn't take you... It doesn't put you off of the movie thinking about such a ridiculous premise, because it does. It owns the premise, and it does it really well. Like, everyone's performances in this movie, I really love them. Dave Franco was good. Emma Roberts was really good. And they all just, they just own this really insane premise of just doing truth or dare without the truth for money. And I don't want to spoil
you're
it.
You're
but
selling
I
the movie well. You know, it does sound interesting to me. It's just confusing to me that, like, sort of like how Star Trek has basically, like, that came out last week, and no one is talking about that movie anymore. Especially if you look at the box office, it opened at number 3 this past weekend. Mm-hmm. And also this movie Nerve, I feel like nobody's talking about it. Nobody seems that interested in it. Do you think that's sort of unfair?
I think so, because I mean, personally, I really like the movie. I think it's a movie you kind of have to get yourself into. It's not being promoted as widely as Star Trek. It's not a big property. It's really confusing to me how Star Trek is not getting a lot of buzz, especially since they were such a high presence at Comic-Con. There was screenings, there was a whole Hall H thing.
And it got great reviews, too.
Yeah, and the exhibitor hall just had a ton of Star Trek stuff, because I think it was like the 50th anniversary or something.
Though I would add to that, I mean, over the years, people have been arguing that buzz at Comic-Con doesn't seem to translate well into real money for studios. I mean, you can see all kinds of research studies into how, like, a great example that's always brought up is how Scott Pilgrim, they put so much effort to promote Scott Pilgrim at Comic-Con 6 years ago.
I'm glad.
And you know, people were super excited about Scott Pilgrim at Comic-Con, and people were like pumped about the movie, and it got so much praise as soon as it came out. And then that movie was taken out of first run theaters within a week because it bombed so hard. So, like, there is some sort of weird disconnect between events, like, sort of generating attention for movies like Star Trek, only for the movies to just not sort of reach that same mass appeal for whatever reason.
I'm glad you mentioned Scott Pilgrim, because that's what kind of like what this movie is to me. I don't think it's as good as Scott Pilgrim, but
I was about to say, I was like, wow, I need to check this out, like, now, then.
No,
like, love Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim is like the best movie I've ever seen. Not the best, but one of the best movies I have ever seen in my life. And it's not at Nerve isn't as good as that movie, but it's, you know, kind of the same thing. You know, it's a good movie, but it's so hard to, it's not hard to sell, but it's for some reason, it's not being sold very well. It was at Comic-Con. There was some buzz around it, and it's a very odd movie. That's very, like you said, it's very pointed towards this generation, this Pokemon Go generation. And so not a lot of people are seeing it for whatever reason. It's very hard to say why. But I really do think that more people should go see it, because it's a very interesting movie. And it's just one of those movies I think that you kind of have to see and see how you like it. And you definitely should not miss. I think it's worth seeing in a theater.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, so, well, that's that's Nerve. You know, it's got a 56% rating on Rotten Tomatoes right now, so it's mixed. You know, chances are, but I think chances are people who listen to this podcast, I mean, I think it's kind of a movie that skews younger for younger audiences, and that's kind of our deal, so that might be good. Yeah. Other movies that I looked it up, in the directors, Henry Juice and Ariel Schuchman, they've also done Catfish, the movie from 2010 with Nev, and they also did Paranormal Activities 1 and 2 as well, and they've been involved with the Catfish show even. So that's kind of what they're known for, yeah. Yeah, they've done a lot of other movies. They did one other movie called Viral that came out this year, and a couple other things, a couple other like smaller projects. None of these I actually recognize. But yeah, so that's the film. I think this has an audience. I think that some people who go out will find it interesting. I think Emma Roberts is great. She needs to be in more movies. I think Scream Queens has probably contributed a lot to her getting this opportunity to have a starring lead again, be a star, a lead in a movie again. I mean, gosh, it's been like what, since Nancy Drew? I feel like I haven't seen her. So, you know, almost 10 years. So yeah.
I mean, I could be wrong. I could, everyone who listens to this podcast might hate it. I personally thought it was a really good movie. I'd give it like a B+. But, you know, go see it for yourself and see how you like it.
Sounds good. All right. So this week we saw the return to the Bourne franchise. For those of you guys who don't know, the Bourne franchise started 14 years ago, right? Based on the books. And Bourne Identity, Bourne Supremacy, Bourne Ultimatum. It's actually been almost 10 years since Matt Damon has reprised the role as Jason Bourne. We did get the Jeremy Renner film Bourne Legacy in 2012, but you know that's its own thing now. The Aaron Cross movies are actually still a franchise, but we have Jason Bourne back as Matt Damon. And in this new film, it sort of picks up. He's in this self-imposed exile, and he gets wrapped up in a new conspiracy. And it's also, this new film was directed by Paul Greengrass, who directed Supremacy and Ultimatum. And yeah, we're going to talk about it. We're going to see where we kind of landed. But first, let's talk about where we were at going into the film. What do you guys think of the Bourne movies? I'll start by saying I'm not a big Jason Bourne fan. I've never really liked these movies. I've never thought that they were that interesting, or I've always looked at them as generic action films. And I sort of understand why people watch them and why they're very popular. Like, I get what it is about them that people like. It's never really done it for me. I don't buy the whole, like, it's a thinking man's James Bond, you know, that kind of thing. I just sort of watch them and I'm like, it's just like a generic spy thriller with really weird handheld camera techniques that I've never been that impressed by. Like, I get the arguments. Like, it's like you're in the fight with him. And I'm like, I don't want to be in the fight with him. That's always kind of been my take on it. But Kyle, you went into this movie, I believe, as a big Jason Bourne fan, correct?
That's correct. I've loved these, the original trilogy specifically, since I was a kid. I sort of stumbled upon them on accident, and I was like, oh, these are kind of interesting. They're like, there's a little bit more to the plot going on. He has to figure out, like, you know, who he is and why he's doing all the things he can do. So I went in with really high hopes. I actually went, after I saw some of the trailers, I went and rewatched the end of Ultimatum just to kind of see how this series ended, and I felt like it ended on a pretty good note to end a trilogy that left some openness to what could happen next, but also didn't feel like, oh, well, there has to be more movies. So it ended on a pretty good note. So then when I saw the trailer, I had a little fangirl moment of, oh, another Jason Bourne movie, how cool! And then I was like, wait a minute, what are they going to do? Like, what's going to happen? So I went in with high expectations because I love the series, but I was also interested to see like where it was going to go.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up how it's like, what are they going to do? Because spoilers for Bourne Ultimatum, if you haven't seen that movie, you definitely don't want to watch Jason Bourne. You're going to be too confused. But you find out at the end of Ultimatum that Jason Bourne volunteered, you know, to be an assassin. Like, it's on him, everything that happens to him. So it's interesting that they open Jason Bourne with kind of dodging that. Like, it doesn't really get to his turmoil over it. He just sort of still doesn't trust the CIA, doesn't trust anybody, and is always on the move. And the film never really addresses it. They actually shift the story so that he has another reason to distrust them, another reason to be mad at them. And we'll get into it more, but that's one of my major issues with the film. It's very repetitive. It repeats a very familiar formula that I already didn't like. But Kayla, you do like the formula of the Bourne movies. What is it about them that you've liked growing up?
Well, I don't know. I just think it's kind of like him as a character. I grew up watching them. Like, it was kind of like my, you know, the action movie my parents showed me when I was a kid. They were like, oh, watch this, it's so cool. So, yeah, just seeing, like, as a kid, this being my go-to spy action movie was really cool because I don't know, I like I get that it's repetitive, and I get that, like, it's got shaky cam and all this, but I feel like the moments that do stand out, like, are easily, like, you can easily, like, I can pick out so many moments from those movies. Like, it's memorable still. And there's, like, moments where it brings up really interesting, like, either dialogue or different, like, questions that he either has with civilians or the other assassins that are trying to kill him. So I feel like, as repetitive as it is and as, like, cheesy as it can be sometimes, it still has nice moments, whether it be in, like, the fight choreography or, like, his cleverness, how he gets in and out of situations, how he helps people. It's just always interesting.
I will give the movie that as well, or all the movies. I think they do have good moments. They're memorable. It's hard to forget what happens. I would say that I forgot most of Identity, but I do remember key things that happen in Ultimatum and Supremacy, and certain things in this new film that sort of, like, I can kind of remember, like, the you know, the framing and how things were staged. I would still say that I think that the movie has a lot of issues, yeah, you know, in terms of how it executes. I think that it takes the things that you just brought up, the things that you really like that I don't like. And this new movie, I think, not only does them again, but sort of does them in, like, the least interesting way compared, like, relative to all the other movies. So let's get into it. You know, again, we're not gonna do any spoilers, so don't worry. We're just gonna, you know, because Adonis and Bridget haven't seen the film, and Adonis and Bridget, interrupt us anytime if you have any questions about the movie. So, Jason Bourne, it's Matt Damon again. I think to get a Bourne movie right, you have to have. I think Matt Damon is by far the most appealing force of these movies. Without Matt Damon and his performance and what he brings to the character, you just have that generic spy thriller, right? And even I will say that he elevates it a bit. And I think with Jason Bourne, I don't think there's anything specific that Damon does wrong here, but I think the way they write him in this movie just leaves a lot to be desired. It really, just where they go with him from here isn't just... doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense on paper. It doesn't make sense in execution. It's not where I saw this character going after Ultimatum, you know. And Kyle, would you agree with that?
Definitely. One of the things that caught me off guard about this movie was that it seemed definitely to have an agenda. And that's one of the things that I like. I'm a big science fiction movie person. And so one of the things I like about sci-fi movies is that they sort of play into, like, take an extraterrestrial approach to, like, aliens invading the U.S. or, you know, contagion, things breaking out. So you can tell that movies have undertones of what they want you to think and believe. But this one seemed pretty overt. And with a lot of the Bourne movies, it's kind of like, oh, the government is bad. The government is evil. They've got all these, like, things that you these secret programs that you wouldn't approve of, but you kind of turn a blind eye to because you want to keep the country safe. And it just... I felt like I got the agenda of the movie a lot more. And they kept trying to do, like, pop culture references to different things.
Like, specifically, do you mean, like, celebrities and stuff? Or
I don't think this is a spoiler. I don't remember what the... But there's, like, a tech conference.
Oh, right. So I'll bring that up real quick. I mean, the movie does... adds two elements that I've never seen in the Bourne franchise before: hacker culture and Silicon Valley culture. Yeah. And the only reason the Silicon Valley stuff happens at all is to make a specific moment in the third act more impactful, which I think was very pointless. I think what they should have done with this is, I think every moment that they switch over to this subplot involving this CEO of, like, a Facebook-like startup, every time they do that, the movie loses steam. And it's one more scene that doesn't give us anything about Jason Bourne. Because we don't, like, when this movie is going, we don't know what he's been up to for 10 years. We don't know where his head's at with anything. And I realized that, like, that made sense when it was Identity. When he doesn't know who he is, we're like him. Yeah. We don't know who he is. But at this point, he knows everything. Yeah. And yet he's still acting like he doesn't. Mm. Like, there's no change there. And the Silicon Valley stuff that you brought up sort of just feels like, why are we watching this? What is this other movie that's happening? Yeah. I don't care about it. Yeah. It doesn't connect with the main plot, which it just is like choppily put together. It's like, why is this head of the CIA even at this conference doing this specific thing? Not a spoiler. It's just like a plot point here. Yeah. It's very odd.
Yeah, I just felt it. Like you just said, it seemed really choppy. Like the movie didn't flow very well. And there were plenty of times where I'd sit there in the theater and kind of lean back and go, so wait, what does this have to do with Jason Bourne at all?
And I think the big problem with that is there are a lot of action scenes. They fixed that from Bourne Legacy.
Yeah.
But the action scenes go on and on and on. And you have like the typical like car chase and all the tension. Like people are walking around looking concerned and not doing anything and talking to each other. Cut to the computers. Cut to, whoa, what's Bourne up to? Oh, show them walking again. And they just do it so many times. And it's like, can you not cut this really long scene in half and give us a moment for Jason Bourne and Nikki Parsons to talk?
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't happen. And you think that's about to happen, and then it doesn't. And then it's just a really long scene. And that was my big issue. Like, I think that Ultimatum did this way better,
yeah.
Right? And, like, with Supremacy, it made sense because, you know, spoiler for that movie, his love interest dies very early in Supremacy. So it makes sense that it just becomes, boom, it's a thriller. It's like, it's an action movie, really.
Yeah.
And this one, it doesn't really know what it wants to be. So that it just doesn't. I don't know. Like, am I supposed to know more about Jason Bourne? Did I miss something? And that was a big issue for me.
You had to read the companion comic book, John.
Yeah, no, I agree with basically everything you've said. There was, like, one moment where I was like, oh, Bourne's doing something cool. I'm enjoying this. Other than that, I was like, did someone change out the movie when the guy got up and was like, let me tell you a little bit about Pied Piper? I was like, what? But yeah, I mean, for the most part, though, like, I enjoyed the score. I enjoyed the, like, it's been a while since I've seen any of the old movies, so I was like, oh, it's Jason Bourne, car chase. Security camera footage.
Yeah, there are a handful of good scenes in here. There's a handful of, like, really good fight choreography. I mean, because for them, this is just, like, for Greengrass and Damon at this point, it's like putting on a well-worn glove, you know? Like, they don't get that aspect of it wrong. But I think it shows a little bit that Tony Gilroy isn't writing this film. He worked on the previous ones, and yeah, I think they were just missing a really good writer for this film, and that's why, I think that's a big reason why it falls short in a way.
I felt like there were a lot of the different uses of technology I kind of had to, like, turn a blind eye to.
Yeah, the hacker stuff was just beyond disbelief.
Because there were a few things, and in some of these more action movies, there are things I'm willing to kind of go, okay, that's fine. Yeah. But some of this stuff, I saw it happen on the screen, and I went, I don't believe for a single second that that's actually possible. Like, there are some of the ways that Bourne gets around, or that he can, like, I don't know, interact with or follow different people, that I'm kind of like, okay, that's a huge stretch, but it theoretically could be done. Mm-hmm. There were other ways of them, like, spying on him and sort of interacting with him, like the government interacting with him, that I was like, I don't think that technology exists. Like,
It doesn't reasonably exist. Like, you can, like, have something that sort of is, it makes sense that it would exist. And in this case, there were certain ways that they communicated with him that were just sort of like, that's not a thing. Like, that's not what you would do. And also, I would point out the globetrotting is a big thing with this, right? The way that he manages to move around as quickly and efficiently as the government without getting caught is just wild. And it's really there as an excuse to, let's do Berlin. Okay, now we got to go to London. Now we got to go to Athens. And it's just like, place, 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 place. And I'm like, how is he doing any of this? How is he getting to certain places so quickly? And I don't think it's properly explained. And the way that he gets to America is sort of explained.
Yeah.
But it's also like, we're dealing with the CIA. There are only so many ways you can get from Europe to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're not able to cut off his transportation, which is the first way that you're able to, like, catch this guy, it was a little hard for me to swallow.
Yeah. I was like, passports do expire at some point, you know? How did he just get all of his old... So I don't know.
Right. We would get into spoiler territory if we talked about that any further, but you kind of get the idea. I think we've said about all that needs to be said without spoiling it. I would just say that I just really didn't like this movie. I thought it was very average and mediocre, and as always. And I don't think there was anything egregiously bad about it, right? Like, we've all mentioned, like, pretty basic flaws, things that they can kind of take you out of the movie, but it still is an entertaining movie at times. Mm-hmm. So for that reason, I give the movie a C. I think it's right down the middle. It's just not very special. And for a Bourne movie to get a C, I think for a lot of people, that's a kind of really sad. You know, a lot of people give these movies like A's and high B's, you know? So sad to say, it's not the Bourne movie that changed my mind. Kayla, how would you grade the Bourne films?
The Bourne films?
Or sorry, I've just meant to say Jason Bourne.
This newest one? Like a C. Yeah.
Kyle, A plus?
No, this time, you know, I'm switching it up. I'm actually going to go with a C plus, however, this time.
Okay. For Easy A Kyle, that's high praise.
Yeah. I didn't love it. There were elements of it that I was like, okay, this is a Jason Bourne movie, but there were enough significant plot holes that sort of pulled me out and maybe like look at Ainsley, my wife, who's sitting next to me and kind of go, what just happened? That it, I don't know, it sort of broke it for me.
You and Ainsley are so progressive, by the way, you know, just making it work in Puerto Rico. All right, guys, that's Jason Bourne. Adonis, Bridget, after hearing, are you guys like interested in this movie at all at this point?
Not now.
I was never really interested to begin with, because like you, John, I was never a fan of the Bourne movies. I grew up watching them because my mom and dad, they were into them, but I don't know. They never really caught me. So, I don't know. I mean, I might check it out on DVD one day.
Were you a fan, Bridget?
My dad was a huge fan, so because of him, I've become a total nerd, so I felt obligated to enjoy them. But that's the thing. I haven't actually seen any of them.
Oh, okay. Well, then I think watching this one, I don't know. Maybe you would like this better because none of it's familiar, you know? Although I would say so many movies have ripped off Bourne at this point that it will actually probably be familiar. You'll be like, oh, this is a lot like Body of Lies. You know, it's just there's a lot of there are a lot of movies that have tried to replicate the success.
Yeah. It'll be awesome to watch on Netflix in a few months.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it literally probably is going to be on HBO very shortly. All right, guys, we had a lot of fun, but let's wind the show down and answer some question and answers from last week. Here's your feedback on the question of the week. So in the last episode, all right, we asked you guys, hey, which upcoming DC live action movie do you think is going to be the best? Not the one you're most looking forward to, but the one that you think is just going to blow everybody away. All right. And you had a lot of choices. You had Suicide Squad. You had Justice League, Wonder Woman, Cyborg, Flash, all of these films, the Batman solo project. I don't think anyone picked that. And here's what you guys had to say. We'll move through it quick because we got stuff to do. Katie.
Busy people.
Was the first answer said, to answer the question of the week, I'm only considering Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman, and Justice League, mostly because we don't really know much about the ones that will come after them. So fair point, Katie. From what we have seen so far, I think Wonder Woman will be the best. Because from just seeing the trailer, it looks like this movie has the most thought and care put into it. I do believe that Suicide Squad will be a good movie. It's one of my most anticipated for this year. But I believe that Wonder Woman will still top it. As for Justice League, I have no clue what to expect. I want this movie to be good so bad because, like a lot of others, I grew up watching all the Justice League cartoons. And so Justice League, it has a special place in my heart. But sadly, I honestly believe that this movie will take after Batman v Superman and be a flop. P.S. I'm so glad you brought up Sing Street. I had never heard about it before, but it sounds like a movie I would very much enjoy. And I hope you had a great time at Comic-Con. Adonis, you lucky duck, smiley face.
Oh, okay, I was just about to disagree with you on the Wonder Woman thing, but then you complimented me.
Yeah, now Adonis is swooning. Katie, yeah. I really hope you check out Sing Street. I can't stress enough. It is my favorite movie of the year. I fell in love with it. It's such a great film. It's a very simple film. It's a very genuine film. John Carney, there's a reason he's one of my favorite directors and writers. Hope you check it out. And as for your answer, really great answer. I think you make a great point that, like, with Justice League, it's hard to be optimistic about it. It really is. Mostly because a lot of the issues I have with DC are how they deal with Superman. So, yeah. I don't know. But Wonder Woman,
I don't like their editor, because I think they have the same trailer editor they did for Batman vs. Superman, and he's just so bad at cutting trailers.
Well, I don't think the Justice League thing was supposed to be a trailer. Like, we brought this up last week. It feels more like a feature.
But they're marketing it as a trailer and saying, check out the new trailer. And so even if it is a feature, it's, I don't know, they're making a mess of everything.
It is weirdly edited. But I would say that the Batman vs. Superman trailers, at least toward the, I think the first official one, I liked that trailer. I thought it was very exciting, and I thought it looked very interesting.
I just think he chose all the best moments of the film and therefore spoiled, like, the best moments of the film.
Yeah, well, the trailer that I hated was the one that, like, went all the way to showing Doomsday. Like, that was just terrible. But they did have a good one that had just Batman in it, and it like showed some of the Batman action stuff, and that was really cool. Dominic Morlino said Suicide Squad, and Adonis, you never answered. Which one would you are you looking? You think is going to be the best?
Oh, definitely Suicide Squad, because like Katie, I don't want to like talk about the later ones because we don't know anything about them. I think Flash might be good. Cyborg might be good if they change the costume.
It was like I was saying, like, I don't like what they're doing with Flash at all. I didn't think he was funny in this new trailer. I don't like Ezra Miller's deal. Like, I don't get it.
Someone made a great observation. He acted just like Lex Luthor did in the Batman Superman trailers. He has the whole witty, quote unquote, witty banter where he's like, that sounds like, what did he say? He was like, that sounds like an over exaggeration or something when Batman's like, you're fast or something. I don't know. It sounds like Zack Snyder's trying to give him smart dialogue, but he's failing at it.
Or, yeah, whoever is writing this. I hope it's not David Goyer. As for Suicide Squad, Dominic, I understand why like, Suicide Squad, it looks really good. You know, we know the most about it. I think that there are a lot of things in it that look really interesting. But I still, for whatever reason, the Wonder Woman trailer just blew me away. I haven't been this excited for a DC movie in a long time. And I think mostly it's because Patty Jenkins, as a director, I think is just such the right fit. So I still disagree, but Suicide Squad is a great pick. Mango said, and Mango, we haven't seen you in a while. We've missed you. Hope you've been enjoying the show in silence. He said, I don't really watch DC movies, but I'm thinking Wonder Woman will probably be the better movie. See, Mango gets me. Right? Like, Mango, we're two peas.
I think the Wonder Woman movie, the trailer was really good, but I don't know. I feel like I'm more excited for Suicide Squad just because it looks like such a fresh and original comic book movie.
I get that, yeah. Because Wonder Woman basically looks like a better version of Captain America and Thor, honestly.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating about the Wonder Woman thing is, I believe, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the case. It's going to be the first female superhero movie in the post-MCU world, right? Like, we haven't had a female-driven superhero movie, I believe, since Elektra. Right?
Oh, yeah, huh?
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that they're kicking off strong with Wonder Woman. Like, what a way to do it. So, before I read this last comment, Bridget, what is the one that you think is going to be the best?
I'm going to have to agree with you, John. It's definitely going to be Wonder Woman, without a doubt. Suicide Squad looks great, but we know the most about it. That's the only reason why everyone's so excited for it. And it's coming out within, like, a week or whatever it is. I just think Wonder Woman is going to surprise more people.
Fair enough. I believe the same. And Sergio said, hey, guys, this is my first time commenting. But I've been listening to the podcast since the Spy episode.
I'm so sorry.
I never commented because there is a fellow listener with the same name, but he hasn't really been commenting recently. So I thought I might start leaving feedback. Sergio, please do. Sergio, if you just do Sergio and then like the initial of your last name, like Sergio F or something like that, then we'll know exactly who we're talking to. You'd even say Sergio. If you're just like Sergio Prime.
Sergio Prime.
To answer the question of the week, I think Wonder Woman will be the better movie. And guys, I think Wonder Woman wins here, unless Kyle, what do you have?
I think I'm following the herd here. I'm really excited for Suicide Squad because we know the most about it. I've seen a bunch of trailers. I'm really excited for it to come out. But I think that Wonder Woman is going to surprise more people. I think it's going to be really good. I'm really excited for it. I'm excited for more things to come out about it.
And I don't want to assume for Caleb, but I'm pretty sure you said Wonder Woman last week too, right?
Probably, but my answer's changed to the hot dog movie.
Well, is that a DC live action?
Yes.
Well, there you have it, folks. All right. Well, that was our feedback from last week. Thanks for answering. Don't forget to answer this week's question, which all right, guys, let's talk. What should be our question of the week? Coming out of, we talked about a lot of different things. Maybe Game of Thrones would be good because we could say what way would you like to continue Game of Thrones? I think more people, not as many people, will be interested in Split. I think the Joker Jason Todd thing will cause more problems than anything else. And not everybody's seen Stranger Things. What do you guys think?
I think we should do the Game of Thrones thing. What's like, if there was a Game of Thrones spinoff, how would you want it to be done? Like, would you want pitch like a TV it. Movie or something? Yes, yeah. Pitch your Game of Thrones spinoff idea.
Yeah. All right, there you have it, guys. Pitch your Game of Thrones spin-off series, all right? It can be a movie trilogy or a standalone movie. It could be a TV show.
A children's book.
It could be a continuation of Game of Thrones. It could be something from the books. It could be something totally in your imagination. So let us know in the comments on johnnegroni.com. Go to the podcast tab and go to our most recent episode. Answer our question of the week and let us know. And we will be sure to read your comments aloud next week. But with that, it's time to close out the show. It's been a lot of fun conspiring with you guys. But let's finish with our what's coming soon to theaters. Not really much to bring up. The highest grossing films of 2016 so far, the top 10, basically exactly the same as last week. And it's been like that for a while now. But I have a feeling Star Trek Beyond is probably the next movie to cross Warcraft, maybe Ghostbusters. Again, another movie that sort of whimpered, out of the summer conversation. But let's get into what's coming out. Now July is over. We are now getting into August. Good and as you guys July. Know, August is a great month for summer movies. It's usually the month of surprises. It's when you get your Pineapple Expresses and your Guardians of the Galaxies. And I don't think we got any, I don't remember any solid ones from last year, but it was a strong summer. I think most of the best stuff came out with like Jurassic World and Mad Max and Inside Out in June, But we're kicking off strong. On August 5th, we're getting two movies. We'll start with the one that no one's going to watch, Nine Lives.
Excuse me.
This is the Kevin Spacey film with Robbie Amell and Jennifer Gardner and Christopher Walken, which I know Sam is going to enjoy. This is the talking cat movie, and the cat is voiced by Kevin Spacey. It's basically the 100 good deeds of Eddie McDowd, but he's a cat.
No. Listen. I've seen the trailer, and let me tell you exactly why I'm excited for this movie, okay? Let me tell you why I will be there first day. I've seen, when I heard the premise, I was like, no, this movie's going to suck. But then I saw that amazing trailer where Kevin Spacey basically ripped off Click and Garfield all at once. Because listen, let me tell you if this is familiar. We've got a really famous businessman who's really good at work, but not great at home, right? Not a very great dad. He tries, but it's just not working. So, Adam Sandler, Kevin Spacey, meets Christopher Walken, Christopher Walken, at a store. And with the click of a remote, his whole life has changed. And now he's got to learn a lesson. And that's, this movie is going to be Oscar-worthy, guys. It's going to be amazing.
Well, it is being made by frequent Oscar winner Europa Corp.
I don't even know.
Best known for Eurotrip, I'm guessing.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I don't think any of us are gearing up to see Nine Lives. Even the tagline, I don't even remember what it is, but it did make me laugh.
It's so funny how it's exactly like Click and Garfield, though. Like, they even got Christopher Walken back. Did they not try to not get...
There's him? Also, like, a little bit of Ghost Dad in that, too.
Oh, God. No one wants to remember Ghost Dad.
All right. Well, Suicide Squad, obviously, is the big movie that's coming out this week. I mean, this is the one... If you're not going with your kids to see Nine Lives or Super Life of Pets or Finding Dory, you're going to be checking out Suicide, most likely. And, of course, this is Warner Brothers and DC Entertainment, directed by David Ayer, of course. And not to be confused with David Yates. I know somebody got confused with that. It was like the Harry Potter guy is doing Suicide Squad. No, not him.
Not quite.
That was the Legend of Tarzan movie. Also Warner Brothers, though. So this movie, it stars Will Smith, Jared Leto, Margaret Robbie, Joel Kinnaman, Viola Davis, Jai Courtney, Common, Jay Hernandez, and a lot of other people.
Ezra Miller, Ben Affleck, just all the people.
Yeah, Cara Delevingne is in this one, and... It's just Ben Affleck, yeah, sort of, I guess.
And The Flash is going to have a cameo too and stuff.
Is he really? I've avoided all of the new footage since the most recent trailer. So I don't really know a lot of this extra stuff.
It wasn't footage. They just released the cast list and Ezra Miller shows up on the cast as Flash.
Thanks for spoiling that. That's cool. That's great.
We're in the world of the internet. You would have found out.
I was actually getting really close to not finding out.
Well, you're on a movie podcast, John. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, yeah, this podcast isn't where we talk about movies, Adonis. It's where we conspire.
Oh,
obviously.
Yeah. We did so much of that today.
Are we all going to be checking out Suicide Squad? Are we gearing up for an event podcast here?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm going to be away.
Well, they'll have Ireland and Suicide Squad, Bridget.
They'll have Ireland and Suicide Squad.
Is that
No, Ireland's a character. I love how New York City's just a character. All right, well, that'll do it for Now Conspiring. Thanks again for listening. As always, don't forget to check out all of our stuff. I'm linking to Adonis's page where you can read more of his stuff, Adonis the Fan Journalist, as well as Bridget Surdock's writings and most latest things. And, of course, Kayla's art and drawings and digital illustrations. And hopefully we're going to be coming out with our new comic really, really soon.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, thanks as always for listening, guys. Don't forget to check out next week's episode. Don't forget to download and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher. You know the deal. And we will see you again next week from the Internet, California. I'm John Agroni.
Oh, right. From Book, Arizona, I'm Adonis. I forgot Maria's not here.
From the place where comics are supposed to get made,
okay,
I am,
you know,
Kayla Savage.
You're going to spin this around on me.
Soon to be in Ireland, I'm Bridget Surdock.
From the Gryffindor Common Room, I'm Kyle McKee.
We'll see you guys next time. You're such a Slytherin, though.